Good morning, and thank you for joining me on The Path to Liberty. I'm Michael Bolden with the 10th Amendment Center, and this is the show for Monday, November 21st, 2022. And on this episode, I'm highlighting our model legislation, the Fourth Amendment Protection Act. This is an important decentralized strategy where states and individuals, the people of the several states, we can say, can take big steps against the national surveillance state, whether the feds like it or not. Big first steps are important ones. So I've got some background from the founders on this, an overview of the legislation and the strategy, and of course, some action steps that I would encourage you to take today in your state. But first of all, before getting to that, a quick hello and a huge thank you. Thank you so much for being here. Whether this is your first episode or you've been here for every single one since day one, I'm pretty sure I haven't even really been here for every episode, but I do my best, of course, to be as present as possible. And while we allow people another moment or so to get notifications to join us on the live stream and these mainstream platforms, I want to say hi to everyone out in the live chat. I know I'm going to miss a few people. I see some names scrolling up there. Chariton Farmer in Missouri, Dixie in Bama, Brian in Georgia. Good to see you all. Clay Kent over on Facebook and Haji in Southeast Michigan. White Bearded Gnu, Heidi Ho neighbors. That's awesome. Larry Clark from Kansas. Dave Simmons, and everyone else. And Haji points out the great work from Martin. Oh, I can't say the representative's last name. I don't know how to pronounce it, in Michigan. I'm going to mention that piece of legislation that passed in Michigan as well. Leslie, Kirk Morrison, Tom Casey, and everyone else. Thank you so much for being here. But let's get right to this. And I want to point out that the stuff that I'm mentioning in this episode, especially like links to get stuff here, get this model legislation, read it, look up your state legislators at this link. Take action, learn more from the context and the history, the other episodes I'm going to mention. You got to follow us over at 10thamendmentcenter.com/path to liberty. I will publish a blog post somewhere a couple hours after this live stream is done, maybe a little bit earlier today. We'll see if I can get to it quicker. And in each blog post, you'll find all the different platforms we're on, both video and audio only podcast edition, plus a section that says show links. And that's where you're going to find the things that I mentioned. I know a lot of people ask, hey, you mentioned such and such. Where do I find that link? 10thamendmentcenter.com/path to liberty. So let's start out. This is model legislation. I've got a link to it here. Of course, as I'm mentioning, a PDF. It's set to be pretty generic. And in each state, sometimes they go through legislative service requests or LSR, however the process is in each state. The state legislator will file the bill, and then it goes through some technical editing, basically, to reference certain state code or whatever it may be. This is the Fourth Amendment Protection Act. Mind you, this is, again, for the state level, not for the Imperial Congress. We're doing what the founders told us here and taking action on a state level to opt out of a federal program that we see as unconstitutional or bad policy, as James Madison told us in Federalist 46, and saying we're not going to help you do this because we know that the federal government is so big today that no matter what it does, it tells us it relies on states as partners for most federal programs. The National Governors Association told us this, and we've heard it over and over and over again. So when states opt out, it can be a very powerful strategy to bring them to an end. So this model legislation for the states bans the state and all of its political subdivisions. That's anything that's basically part of state or local government from assisting, participating in, or providing material support or resources. And that's a key phrase I'll get to in a moment. To any federal agency in the collection or use of electronic data or metadata, unless they basically follow the Fourth Amendment. Warrant based on probable cause. I will read that amendment to you in just a moment. Now, that phrase, material support or resources, we tweeted about it yesterday. You've got to follow us on Twitter if you're not there for the fun yet. It's at 10th Amendment, all spelled out. But we lifted, here's the tweet. We lifted the grossly broad and intentionally vague phrase, material support or resources, right from the Patriot Act, and included it in our nullification legislation for states to protect the Fourth Amendment from federal abuse. So material support or resources in law is considered very broad. They want to use this against us, against the whole globe, basically. Anybody who provides material support or resources to what they say is, well, whatever, the Patriot Act gives them all kinds of broad power. So we're basically saying anything that helps the federal government in their collection of data or metadata or use of it in violation of the Fourth Amendment, which is basically without a warrant, which happens constantly 24/7, 365, the states cannot participate in it. Now, I will get to some more background on this and some from the founders as well, but I first want to point out this link that we have from openstates.org. A lot of people have a hard time finding who their state representative and state senator is, or a Nebraska just state senator. It's because everybody thinks everything is a national issue, and anytime there's a problem with something, it's call Congress, go to the federal courts, get a new executive in there. And everybody focuses everything on the federal level when we should be focusing almost everything on a state and local level, because that's how you beat the feds, is not to go to the feds and somehow convince feds or new feds to do stuff that the feds aren't supposed to be doing in the first place. It's up to the states and the people to resist, refuse to comply, and nullify. So Open States has a very handy tool called Find Your Legislators. I will link to this in the show notes. All you do is you enter your address and we'll give you a link, or I'll give you the contact information for the state legislators in your area, for your district. So what you need to do to take action, before I get into the details on this, is one, you get the model legislation. That's the first link I had up here, the PDF. Just download it or take the link from it. It'll be available. Then send it to your state legislators, your representative and senator. Be firm and polite. You gotta be polite, no matter how awful these people are. And almost every single one of them is absolutely terrible when it comes to the Constitution and your liberty. But when they hear from, especially on a state level, we know that, for example, on a federal level, back when the some of the bankster bailouts happened, well, I guess this was like 2006 or whatever those that year was, when they were doing those bailouts back then, they would get tens of thousands of calls, all of them in opposition. They just do it anyways. Now, you can see the same kind of thing happen on a state level as well, but it's far more common that state legislators actually don't hear from anybody. And we've heard over the years many, many times, even from committee chairs, all they need is just a mere 10 phone calls on something or 10 emails, as long as they're not copy-paste and the exact same thing clearly coming from some organization. It's just 10 people who live in their district. They're going to start paying pretty serious attention to that. So send this to your state representative and senator. Be polite, because if you're a jerk, it never works. And ask them to introduce the Fourth Amendment Protection Act. So I want to get to some background here. Of course, here's the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution for the United States, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. We think of that phrase, shall not, and it's in there. It's here in the fourth. It's there in the second. It's a very important phrase. It's a very important term. They are not authorized to violate under any circumstance. And they say, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. So I will link to that in the show notes. You can actually see a handwritten copy of the proposed Bill of Rights from 1789 with some of that text in it as well. And I know a lot of people want you to believe otherwise, but to the founders and the old revolutionaries who didn't even make it to ratification, warrantless surveillance that does not particularly describe the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized, a general warrant, for example, or no warrant at all, warrantless surveillance is the definition of an unreasonable search. So as long as they are doing stuff that is so broad that they can just search whatever they want, whenever they want, go through everyone's data everywhere just because they own a phone or they're out driving or they exist, that is a general warrant. It is part of the founding principles of the American Revolution. And the support of these types of principles, the background behind what became the Fourth Amendment, was a huge part of the American Revolution. We know that the real American Revolution started years before the Declaration of Independence. It was a radical change in the viewpoints of the people from being just mere subjects at the whim and will of the king and the king in Parliament, they can do whatever they want whenever they want. Instead, it was a change in viewpoint that said, well, no, there are rules that govern what you do. It may be unwritten, but we have a tradition and you have to follow these rules. And the beginning of the American Revolution, we can go all the way back to 1761 and James Otis Jr.'s 4-hour speech. I have never read the whole thing, but I've got a pretty good excerpt of it here linked in that I will link to in the show notes from Teaching American History. James Otis Jr. gave a 4-hour speech against the writs of assistance in 1761. And basically in that, and I will link to this so you can read it, he argued against what they called at the time general warrants, which just basically said, well, if you own a house in this area, we may go in there and search for a firearm, whatever it may be, whatever the example may be. And he said, really, those are all illegal. And in essence, what we have today, mass warrantless surveillance, they claim they've got like a rubber stamp from a secret court, and they can basically search everyone's billions of records of electronic data, everyone who exists, just merely having a cell phone or an internet connection. That's the definition of a general warrant. James Otis Jr., the beginning of the American Revolution, started out with a discussion about sovereignty, acts against the Constitution are void, and in relationship to warrantless searches. And he said the only legal ones were what he called special warrants or special writs to search houses or places specially named. Here's how John Adams put it in a letter to William Tudor some years later. He said, Otis was a flame of fire. American independence was then and there born. You're not allowed to do this. Only special warrants are legal. General warrants are illegal. Acts against the Constitution are void. And that was the beginning. This was the beginning of the controversy between the colonies and Great Britain. John Adams put it this way. Then and there was the first scene of the first act of opposition to the arbitrary claims of Great Britain. The first act of opposition to the arbitrary, so arbitrary power is something that was listed in the Declaration of Independence. It's unlimited government power that can change the rules on a whim. And the first arbitrary claim of power is what Adams is saying here, was a general warrant, not a special warrant. He said, then and there, the child independence was born. In 15 years, in 1776, he grew up to manhood and declared himself free. Now, there are so many ways that the federal government today and the states help them, and that's the key. The states are helping the feds in almost every scenario. They violate the clear rules of the Fourth Amendment. Now, unfortunately, a lot of people just believe whatever the experts tell them, and then the experts love the monster state, so they always talk about expanding federal power. Now, when a lot of people think about federal surveillance, they generally only think about the NSA and surveillance under Section 215 of the Patriot Act, but there is a lot more. I've got to list a couple of episodes for you guys to check out so you can get some details on this. Patriot Act on steroids, surveillance state beyond Section 215. We cover everything from fusion centers, information sharing, national security levels, letters, TSA enhanced screening, and the growth of facial recognition. They all come from the Patriot Act and its successor. There's also license plate tracking. They track where you go and they keep records of this and they build profiles on people based on the so-called crime of driving. And this really kind of, I know there's going to be some hardcore people who maybe come across this who say, well, this is the problem with having a driver's license and license plates. And yes, you could probably make that case. But we know that primarily as a tool of the war on drugs, an unconstitutional war on drugs, and spearheaded by the DEA for over a decade now, and for the first 8 years it was done in complete secret, they have been running a license plate tracking program spearheaded by the feds, but primarily operated, the data gets collected by the state. So you can see how turning off resources or banning participation in these types of things can be very effective. If the DEA's license plate tracking scheme, and I did this episode on this, oh, looks like 4 years ago now, November of 2018, over a 2-year period, it was covered that just only under a certain number of departments around the country, they had collected 2.5 billion scans tracking license plates, 2.5 billion times in a 2-year period. We know that number is going to be much, much higher today. And so not participating in that surveillance program can have a huge effect on bringing it down. So if the DEA runs it or the FBI or the ATF, we know they all do this kind of thing. if they're trying to run this program, but they're leaning heavily on the states to get the data, then the states can opt out and bring it to an end. And then, of course, there's another episode that I've got here. Those ALPRs, those license plate readers, just as a quick aside, a lot of people don't think they're very accurate, but they can be incredibly accurate. If anything, they're very fast. They will collect up to, I think it was somewhere between 1,500 on the low end up to, depending on which model that they get. And generally, these things are funded by federal grant programs, joint terrorism task forces and things like that, drug control or gun control programs where the feds throw money at the states to get new technology to do stuff where they hand data to the feds. They get up to 5,000 license plates per minute. It's crazy. There's also gun control surveillance through acoustic gunshot detection. And this episode that I have here, street level surveillance, top four technologies and strategies to stop them. We cover things like fusion centers, cell site simulators are what they would often call Stingray. It's a Harris Corporation brand name Stingray devices. Most of these are software based now, but what they do is they trick a cell phone instead of connecting to a cell tower to connect to the cell site simulator. It's a simulator of a cell site, and it is passes along that information seamlessly. So you pick up your phone, you send a text, you make a phone call. If you are within range of one of these cell site simulators, you first connect to the simulator. They get all the data, the location data, the MC number of your phone. They know where you are, who you're talking to, oftentimes the complete text of your communication. And then it passes it along to the tower so you can make that connection. And it's so quick that you don't even know what happens. It's not like old school spy movies where you're like, oh, I heard a beeping on the phone. Nothing like that. This is totally perfected. I also covered facial recognition and a few other things. So those are some episodes and some of the main ways that the feds and states partner together to violate the Fourth Amendment. Now, the states are terrible on this. The feds are terrible on this. But we know for 100% sure we are never, ever, 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 ever going to get the federal government to limit its own power. This is the wrong way. All of the leading founders told us that you need to work with the states, even when they're bad, to convince them to do the right thing, and that is to opt out. We have seen this on a number of issues where states stop participating in federal programs. For example, cannabis prohibition, and it has a big effect of bringing that federal program, well, closer to an end. We'll get there soon, though. Well, soon is in quotes. Here, for example, is Roger Sherman. This is from December of 1787. He said, all acts of the Congress not warranted by the Constitution would be void. So the idea that any act outside of the Constitution, as James Otis Jr. put it in 1761, is void just in theory, in philosophy, in law, according to the text of a Constitution, written or unwritten, doesn't matter. But what's important is you can't just say, oh, this is void, government that's violating the Constitution, and then all of a sudden it says, oh, okay, well, we'll just stop violating your rights because you said so or you waved a paper at us. That's not how it works. Sherman understood this, and so did basically all the other founders and old revolutionaries. They don't get void in practice by begging government to stop doing stuff that it's not supposed to do in the first place. It gets void in practice by opting out, resistance, and the like. And that's how Sherman kind of, he's alluding to it here. He says, let me just read it in context. All acts of the Congress not warranted by the Constitution would be void, nor could they be enforced contrary to the sense of a majority of the states. So he recognizes that even at a time when the proposed general government, this is 1787, December of 1787, when the proposed federal government is going to be tiny in comparison to what we have today, even at that time, if the people of the state said, no, we don't want to participate in this, the federal government would not be able to enforce their acts that go beyond the Constitution. He also acknowledged in this short statement that they would try, and it would be a very contentious situation, I guess. Here's Alexander Hamilton. I guess I'm going to start hammering this quote home over and over and over again because it says so much. This is in Federalist number 33. And again, I should hit the caveat. Alexander Hamilton sucked, but in comparison today, he sounds pretty amazing here. He said, but it will not follow from this doctrine. He's talking about the supremacy clause. It will not follow from this doctrine that acts of the large society, which are not pursuant to its constitutional powers, but which are invasions of the residuary authorities of the smaller societies, will become the supreme law of the land. These will be merely acts of usurpation and will deserve to be treated as such. So as soon as they go beyond the limits of the Constitution, this is a theft of power from the sovereign people of the several states. This is a usurpation. That's what the founders called usurpation. He said they're acts of usurpation and deserve to be treated as such. So if they are not law of the land, the people and the states are supposed to treat them that way. That is, not comply with them until the government who's usurping decides, oh, well, we screwed up and we're going to stop usurping. We're going to stop spying on you, even though you told us in the document you've given to us, the rules you've given to us, that we're not supposed to spy on you in the first place. Well, that's never going to work. And we know that, especially if you're not new here, James Madison said this is how to put these principles into practice. So if you look at Hamilton in Federalist 33, as soon as they go beyond the limits of the Constitution, it's a usurpation. You got to treat it like that. And then just a few papers later, well, Federalist 46, Madison gave us the strategy. How do you treat these acts of usurpation as such? He said the states and individuals are supposed to use a refusal to cooperate with officers of the Union. One more episode. Stop the Feds, James Madison style, talks about this from Federalist 46 and his statements regarding the states having a duty, they are duty bound to interpose to what he said, arrest the progress of the evil, to stop the advancement of the evil that is the violations, the deliberate and palpable violations of the Constitution by the federal government. So that's the James Madison approach to dealing with federal overreach. So back to the model legislation, we include some pretty detailed definitions here. And this is actually, this happens almost every time we come up with a piece of model legislation. I look back at some of the older versions of it, I'm like, oh my God, this is garbage. But to be honest with you, if we waited until we learned everything we knew we're supposed to know, we would never learn. We learn so much just by putting something together, coming up with an idea, people trying it. We get the opposition. We learn from the opposition. We learn from supporters what works, what doesn't, what needs to be included, what doesn't. And it's a long process. This is not necessarily easy stuff to do. But Representative Martin Horlach, I think, in Michigan, he was a sponsor of the Fourth Amendment Protection Act, which passed into law in the 2017-2018 legislative session in Michigan. House bill, I think it was 4430. Maybe Haji 1954 can actually help me out on that one. We actually got this section on we didn't include the detailed definitions of what they were talking about. And when he went through the process, I don't know if it was him or someone helping him or someone in the coalition that supported it in the grassroots, but said, look, if you really want this to be effective in Michigan, you definitely have to include detailed definitions of what you mean by electronic data and metadata. So electronic data means information related to an electronic communication or the use of an electronic communication service, including but not limited to content, sender, recipient, format, the precise or approximate location. So we do so much on the state and federal level. They do so much as far as tracking where you're going. If you think about this, that's a very powerful tool of oppression. If they know not only what people are saying, but if they may have gone to a religious organization or a gun show or a protest in support or opposed to one thing or another, that can tell them a lot. They can paint a pretty powerful picture of who is where and who they need to shut up. And so we're talking about location or, well, the time or date communication was created, sent, or received, the identity of an individual or device, et cetera, et cetera. It's very detailed stuff, and we're very appreciative of the people in Michigan who added this to the legislation, which we copied and improved in our own. We also have a definition of metadata, means information generally not visible when an electronic document is printed. Now, a lot of people were telling us right after the Snowden leaks, which was, I guess, almost a decade ago, Mike Meharry just reminded me this morning that I think it was 2013 when they were, so this summer will be the anniversary, 10-year anniversary of that. A lot of people are saying, oh, it's just metadata. What can they, they're only collecting metadata at the NSA. They can't do anything with that. And a lot of important technology researchers showed how you could just use just the metadata, not the entire communication to paint a pretty detailed picture of who someone was, who they were communicating with, what their patterns were, what they might do in the future. Think of the algorithms. If you've shopped on some of these mainstream websites, a lot of times these algorithms are so smart, you're looking at one thing and it says, oh, you might also be interested in blank. And then you're thinking, oh yeah, well, I definitely am. And that's a very simplistic version of this. But metadata means information generally not visible when an electronic document is printed describing the history, tracking, or management of the document, including information about the data and et cetera. It describes how, when, and by whom the data was collected, created, accessed, or modified, and how the data are formatted. So this is important stuff to include in there. And we also have the next section, which is the essential part here. Prohibition on assistance to a federal agency engaged in illegal collection of electronic data or metadata. It says, this state or political subdivision of this state shall not assist and honestly, I think we're going to remove this word illegal, because as soon as you include the word illegal in there, this, I think, is a mistake on our part. Well, just editing on the fly here. I'm going to update this and make sure it's fixed, because as soon as you include illegal in the section after the enacting clause, what they're going to say is, well, no one's determined this to be illegal. We got to wait for a court to decide that. So I'm going to remove that. So it's going to say prohibition on assistance to federal agencies engaged in collection of electronic data or metadata, and explains what that means. This state or a political subdivision of this state shall not assist, participate with, or provide material support or resources to enable or facilitate a federal agency in the collection or use of a person's electronic data or metadata unless certain conditions are met, which includes the collection or use is pursuant to a warrant based upon probable cause that particularly describes the person, place, or thing to be searched or seized. That is a primary one. The person is given informed consent, a court order, a judicially legally recognized exception to that warrant requirement, the basics to get the ball rolling. And then once we get these things passed, like in Michigan, like in California, we can take what we've gotten and then improve upon it. We're not going to get it all done in one fell swoop, but it is an important first step to take. Now, in practice, this leads to a ban on all kinds of data sharing. For example, via facial recognition, these cell site simulators, the stingrays, it would end state cooperation the DEA and probably ATF and FBI license plate tracking programs, cell phone searches, drone surveillance, data exchange through fusion centers, memorandums of understanding and agreement, MOUs, ISC, all kinds of ways that they share the data behind the scenes that no one ever hears about, but you will learn about if you check out a few of these episodes that I mentioned. And then kind of the juicy part is it also bans the sharing of state-supplied resources. Now, depending on the state and depending on the facility that we're talking about, depending on the federal agency, this could be personnel, it could be electricity, it could be water, like the billions of gallons of water in Utah provided by a political subdivision of the state of Utah to the Utah NSA data center that is required to keep those supercomputers cooled and functioning. It would just shut it down. And this, they would ban these resources to any federal agency, not just NSA, but FBI, ATF, DEA, anytime that they're helping them conduct mass warrantless surveillance. And we use that phrase, material support or resources, just like they did in the Patriot Act, against them, because really it is a very, very broad term in law. Now, this is already on the books, as I mentioned, as law in Michigan. SB 828 passed a couple years prior to that in California, but it needs some editing, and we'll probably put out a blog post for people in California that want to take action on that. It does need some improvement. And as a reminder, the action steps you got to take is, one, download the model legislation. I will link to that in the show notes, 10thamendmentcenter.com/path2liberty. Send it to your state senator and state representative. And again, be firm but polite. If you're a jerk, it just will never work, and urge them to introduce the legislation in your state today. Well, let me take a look and see if there's any comments or questions. We're trying to get this kind of information out to more and more people, and nothing helps us get that job done more than the financial faith and support of our members. You can join us for as little as $2 a month over at 10thamendmentcenter.com/members. If you don't feel any pressure, if you're struggling with finances, don't feel pressure to join us. But if you've got a couple of bucks a month extra of that dirty government fiat, throw it at us and we will do more than anyone on earth to stand for the Constitution and liberty with less. No one does more with less. As my great friend Tom Woods once put it, no one does more on the face of the earth to support the venerable tradition of Jeffersonian nullification than the TAC. Anyways, let me take a look here and see if there's any comments or questions I can get back to. Sharon Patriots says, what the hell is a fusion center? Well, that's a good way to ask that one, because fusion centers are really, really nasty. There's like 70, there's like a few dozen of these around the country, and these are kind of they're not super secretive, but they're a state federal partnership where they're doing, it's basically a clearinghouse for collecting and sharing all kinds of warrantlessly collected information. It's a spy center. And in one of those episodes that I mentioned, probably two of them, I covered what they are and how they have impact on the Fourth Amendment, which is always not good. They do need to be shut down. We're actually working on putting together some model legislation based off of some things that were considered in Maine in the last couple of years to actually withdraw, basically, because what they are is they're a partnership, but the funding also comes from the state. So if the state says, we don't want to participate in this, there is no fusion center in your state. Sharon also says, please share this important show. Hopefully it is helpful to some people. And I really just want people to be able to take action on these things. M. Gabriel, one, download model legislation. Two, send to state reps. Three, request that they file it. Absolutely. Tom Casey says there's one in his city. I know there are multiple ones here in California. John Osgood says SB 828. It was signed into law, of all people, by Jerry Brown a few years ago, and it actually needs some improvement. It needs a couple of technical changes to make it go into effect. So I think they watered it down intentionally as a grandstanding tool, but we drew that legislation at the time. What we were putting out there was so broad that I think they kind of caught on to what we were doing, and we overshot. Sometimes what you do when you go too far, you kind of ruin things. And so some of the things in the Fourth Amendment Protection Act model legislation are just an early step, and they will need to be advanced upon in the near future as well. Anyways, I know I'm going over my time this is important stuff. So I hope you guys don't mind me going a little bit longer than I normally do, but I really appreciate you spending some time with me today. If you can't join us as a member at 10thamendmentcenter.com/members, there are other ways to help us out. Free and easy peasy. You can leave a review on Apple Podcasts, smashing the like button on any or all of the video platforms, leaving comments, sharing links. All that stuff will help spread the word and tell the algorithms to show us to more people. It really helps out a great deal. More important than anything, of course, is to take those action steps that I've mentioned a couple of times in this episode. I hope you enjoyed the episode. I hope you had a great weekend. I hope you learned something. I hope you're encouraged to take action. I hope you have awesome plans with family and or friends for Thanksgiving. My schedule might be a little bit weird this week, but I'm definitely going to do at least one, if not two more episodes at some point, most likely normal time on Wednesday, but probably not on Friday, because that means I would have to work on Thursday to prep the episode. So I might do another one over the weekend. We'll just see what I have going on. But I really appreciate you being here, and I will see you next time here on the Path to Liberty.